Question, ask one.
Using the example of the very first and inaugural path, how does one use this tool to completely uproot the obscurations of that particular path? How does the inaugural path work to completely uproot the obscurations of that path? The uninterrupted path. For example, totally eliminate the obscurations of that path.
How?
For example, in the another path of the minor path of seeing, the obscurations are the intellectually acquired ones. There are so many of them, and just depending on one, without coming out from equipoise, the yogi is able to eliminate all of them without elaborations, thinking about it and all that. So just wondering, how is that done with so many objects of abandonment? The intellectually acquired, there are many objects of abandonment. So how does the yogi do it, uproot it in just one sitting, one meditative equipoise, without the need to eliminate them one by one, for example?
That 시작하시네. 나 잡으니 그만 세매 세막이 잡대 버리나. 세마 레레네 다 제대로 미스를 오시와. 다른 게 강배 때문에 다 삼대들이 함. 자다 함도 건치발 자동 좀 지발했어. 근데 식성도.
You got a question, right? Okay, I assume that you've got a question.
You didn't get a question, but I will get an answer. Question.
How does a particular uninterrupted path remove the afflictions of the respective level. So the uninterrupted path of the minor path of seeing is said to be the direct antidote against the intellectually acquired afflictions and its seeds, isn't it? So when we talk about intellectually acquired afflictions, there's perhaps more than one in different many varieties, isn't it, right? So how does one uninterrupted path and one meditative repose this, you know, act as an antidote to this variety of afflictions. And so the answer could be this, yeah. So you think about the practice of patience. So if one has a stable and good practice of patience, yeah. If you're patient, you're patient, yeah. You're not just patient to one person and not the other. And you, so, especially when the practice of patience culminates in the perfection of patience, isn't it? So the person who has achieved the perfection of patience is someone who has conquered, you know, anger. And in relation to every single person, yeah. It's not that he has to, you know, practice, you know, with one enemy and then he goes to the next enemy and then, you know, not like that, right? So the example, in the Shantideva's engaging the Bodhisattva deeds, the great Bodhisattva mentions that, you could imagine that the whole world is covered with thorns, yeah. Imagine you have to walk. So it's not practical, and it's probably not possible to eliminate, you know, every single thorn before you start walking, isn't it? But if you put on a pair of shoes, then you can walk anywhere, isn't it? You can just step over the thorns and smash them and what have you. But if you just walk, like, you know, do you
Jonam, true, the most of the children in Nakam Nakalaja. Tonam in Nakam Toya was a Shonshi Kimari. Benan Jonam, true, the most of the children in Nakam Nakam, the Mundi or Jagi, Nova Jamela, the Dunakalaja. Do to Chinitin, Tombani Mosum, Ton to Hana, Taco, Nubata Demaches, and Chazan Jum Tuaji, Dinna Chagam Toya was a Chagi Kimara. Roy Nuba.
So the ability or the, you know, the force, you know, the power behind the first uninterrupted path or the minor path of seeing, yeah, which acts as an antidote to the intellectually acquired afflictions, isn't it? And that power is not, it doesn't happen just, you know, suddenly, you know. That power has been built up already, starting from the beginning of the path of preparation. And then there are the four stages of the path of preparation, isn't it? Heat, peak, forbearance, and supreme mundane qualities. So there are the four stages of the path of preparation. So on those paths, what is it? The Bodhisattva is working hard in order to gain the power, the strength, power of mind to overcome the manifest conception of true existence. And as he progresses through the path of preparation, and the power of his mind becomes stronger and more powerful as he goes along, isn't it? And as such, even the manifest conceptions of true existence that are suppressed along the way, along these four stages, become increasingly more subtle, isn't it? So then comes the time when that bodhisattva's perception of emptiness, you know, becomes direct, where he gains a very clear appearance of emptiness, and he sees it directly without any intervening mental image. You know. And then, you know, that is the time where, you know, the mind becomes powerful, yeah, to overcome, you know, the intellectually, you know, not to overcome, destroy, yeah, the intellectually acquired afflictions and their seeds. Yeah. And when this bodhisattva sees emptiness directly, when he realizes emptiness directly, that realization, you know, is completely free of all dualistic appearances. Yeah, all dualistic appearances is subsided, you know, in the perspective of that wisdom, isn't it? So when this bodhisattva who newly attains the path of seeing, when he achieves the path of release of the first ground, that time he has abandoned, yeah, the intellectually acquired afflictions and their seeds, isn't it? It's affliction. So, and is the uninterrupted path, is the one that does the abandoning, isn't it? So this uninterrupted path is said to be the mind that has the power to destroy the intellectually acquired afflictions, right? So yeah, so then the question would be about, you know, this uninterrupted path of the path of seeing. This particular uninterrupted path is a wisdom directly perceiving emptiness. Yeah. So this wisdom directly perceiving emptiness realizes one specific emptiness, one emptiness related to a specific basis, or this wisdom realizes the emptiness that pervades all phenomena.
What do you think?
Those of you, the previous basic program, special insight we did 1 year, no? So yeah, so yeah, I mean, we could only say that, you know, on the path of release, this is what happens in the in this case, the intellectually acquired afflictions are abandoned, Then we could, I mean, we're about uninterrupted path, you know. I mean, what else could we say about it other than it being a mind powerful enough to overcome, to destroy the intellectually acquired afflictions, yeah. But as to exactly what it is, you know, I mean, really to talk about what it is, it's not possible, isn't it? It's something completely beyond the ordinary scope of mind, isn't it? Beyond us, yeah. No way, yeah. It's like, I think that was a question, yeah. Who was it? Mr. Tan, is it? You asked, right? What is the sign? When you achieve the path of... Siong, where are you? Are you here today? When you achieve the path of release, what sign is there? You know, so... You know, yeah. So not possible, really, actually, to talk about it. So I would think that you would not see any, you would not be able to tell, at least you know, looking at the external demeanor appearance of that person in meditative ego voice. Yeah, I mean, it's like. So in the text and in the teachings, they give this analogy to describe the uninterrupted path and the path of release. I think it is in the notes, in the other set of notes. Yeah. So the uninterrupted path is like expelling the thief from the house, and the path of release is like having closed the door on him. It's one thing to kick him out, yeah. It's another thing to close the door, right? You know the Buddha's teaching, whom I guess all of us consider to be very sacred and precious, you know, consists of the scriptural Dharma and the realizational Dharma, isn't it? Yeah, Buddhist teachings is made up of, consists of these two, the scriptural and the realizational Dharma, yeah. Of the two, the most important one, the more important one is the realizational Dharma. But of course, to have that realizational Dharma, you must first depend on the scriptural Dharma, right? And we discussed this before, right? And of all the realizational dharmas, the pinnacle, the very peak, the top, the best, the highest, the supreme, is said to be the view of the ultimate nature of reality. The view, having the view, the correct view of reality or emptiness, right? So having said this, you know, you have to figure out for yourself that it is so. And you have to figure out for yourself why it is so, right?
Mm.
Yeah, so this is what it said, isn't it? Of all the many realizational dharmas there are, the supreme, the highest, is the wisdom, the mind realizing emptiness. But we have to see it for ourselves. And in order to see, you have to know the reasons, yeah. You have to see for yourself the reasons. So so we need to gain an ascertainment that this is so, that the wisdom, the mind realizing emptiness is the supreme, the highest of the all realizational dharmas. So in order to reach this conviction, it's a conviction, it's an ascertainment. In order to reach that kind of ascertainment, we have to think, analyze over and over and over and over again, yeah.
Chabu po le jang ani chita shishin dila ani thoba samba gomba chabadi ani pengi chigiri dinde sungse dila ta ngone chita dinjung dawa se kechi ngi ma ngone chita yaku shinto ma ani sanje ki sungwe pengi se dila ya chita ngone ti dinde resa otokshin ya dinde pengi samba ta ma yaku shishin ya ne chie ani tomen samba tomen ni dinde sungro thosam chie.
And of the different scriptural dharmas, right? It is, we talked about this, right? So remember, there was next explanation of the benefit of studying, learning, reflecting, and meditating on the perfection of wisdom. So, in one sutra, it is stated that the merit of learning, reflecting and meditating, practicing the perfection of wisdom, far surpasses the merit of someone who fills the billionfold world systems with the seven kinds of jewels and offering all of that to the Buddhists. So we have to think about this benefit over and over again. Of course, in order to understand the benefit, we first have to see the point why we hearing, reflecting, and meditating on the perfection of wisdom has such benefits, isn't it? So ultimately, we are, you know, when we hear, study, reflect on the teachings of the perfection of wisdom, ultimately, we are also thinking, learning about dependent origination. Dependent arising, right? So, by seeing, you know, by coming, by understanding yourself that, you know, there are these benefits, you know, the benefits and therefore the importance of learning, you know, hearing and reflecting on the perfection of wisdom and then coming to practice it later, when you see the importance and the benefit, you know, then the effort will come, isn't it? The aspiration and the effort will come to want to actually study, learn, and think, analyze, and then meditate on the perfection of wisdom, isn't it?
Chidakasim,
So whenever we, you know, have an opportunity to read or recite in the heart of the Perfection of Wisdom Sutra, and when we have an opportunity to think about it, to reflect on it, and to meditate on it, you know, we should remember why we are doing it. Yeah. And the motivation has got to be about, you know, destroying our ignorance and an apprehension of a self. As the Buddha gave such a teaching in order to enable us, enable sentient beings like us, to destroy our ignorance and the apprehension of a self. You know. So with that in mind, we recite, you know, or reflect or learn or meditate on the Heart of the Perfection of Wisdom Sutra. And of course, conjoin it with the thought that I'm doing this, you know, I'm doing this in order to achieve full enlightenment for all living beings. Then the benefit will be great. Yeah, yeah, very, very extensive. Yeah.
Oh, today's that today is there. That today is that today is that golden sunrise. That, I need that.
So we always carry the virtuous motivation, and then, you know, whenever you recite or, you know, think about the heart or the Perfection of Wisdom Sutra, you could also think that, you know, I'm doing this also to plant imprint of emptiness, yeah. Yeah. In the mind, yeah. So Buddha spoke about the amazing benefits here of hearing, reflecting, and meditating on emptiness, isn't it? Right. So just by hearing, learning, studying, you know, the teachings on emptiness and on the Perfection of Wisdom, one accumulates so much merit, isn't it? So much merit. And then, on top of just hearing, you know, just on top of just accumulating the data, if we process the data by thinking about it, you know, analyzing, critically analyzing and thinking about it, then of course the merit would supersede. Yeah. That merit will supersede the merit that we get from just hearing the teachings on emptiness. Yeah. Then based on our critical analysis and thinking, if you do manage to get some kind of ascertainment, whatever understanding you have, and you, with that as the capital, you know, that whatever ascertainment, yeah, real ascertainment you have, and then by depending on mindfulness and introspection, by depending on these two, then if we familiarize our minds with what? Familiarize our minds with the ascertainment, whatever knowledge or meaning of emptiness that we have ascertained, then of course then that merit would supersede, you know, the merit that comes from just analyzing or reflecting on the perfection of wisdom. Hearing, you know, the threefold activity of hearing, reflection, and meditation, these three activities, let's say imagine we're doing it, you know, the object here is the perfection of wisdom, you know, these three activities do plant imprints on the mind. But there's a difference in the quality and the stability of the imprints that are planted on the mind. The imprint that is planted on the mind through hearing alone is not long-lasting and it is not stable. Yeah. And the imprint that is planted on the mind through the reflection which produces certain knowledge, well, that imprint comparatively is more stable and lasts a longer time. But the most important one is the imprint that is planted on the mind through repeatedly familiarizing our minds with whatever ascertainment or conviction that we've gained over and over again. And of the imprints that are planted by these three activities, it would be the imprint that is planted on the mind through familiarizing, we call it meditation, but it's familiarizing. It's that imprint that is that moves from life to life, you know, and that gives hope in the life, in the future lives. You know. Yeah, it is that one. Well, studying or learning, hearing is important. Yeah, of course it is important. Without which, there's nothing to think about. If there's nothing to think or analyze, then there's nothing to familiarize yourself with at the end of the day, isn't it? Yeah. So, but you know, on the basis of the data accumulated from hearing, we have to work on it. We have to use, you know, process the data, analyze, you know, and then familiarize the mind over and over and over again, you know, with that whatever knowledge, you know, or understanding or conviction one has gained. That is where we need to put the effort in. Yeah, that's where we need to put effort in that, yeah.
독신이 나타나 갑자기 저셔서 삼모 동반이를 쓰기하래 저서 삼모 동반이 되면 숨으로 삼모 동반이 괜찮아 어떤 내시다 저서 검순 시도나 아니 지금 시위지 소문사 하시다 뭐네 시다 어디 한 공부 시고 할 때리셔
No, please think about, you know, please think about, you know, the merit, you know, the benefit and the merit, you know, that you can accumulate, you know, from learning reflecting and familiarizing or meditating on the perfection of wisdom.
Yeah.
So the sutra starts with the prologue, isn't it? Tassadahi, at one time, the Bhagavan was attending mass of vouchers, Martin and Rajagriha, together with Greek community monks and Greek community bodhisattvas. At the time, the Bhagavan was absorbed in the concentration of the categories of phenomena called profound perception, right? So when we, you know, when you know, you think about the prologue, when we recite this particular section of the sutra, you can bring to mind Buddha. A very Buddha, a special being, isn't it? You know, think about, you know, his the qualities of his exalted body, exalted speech, exalted mind. For it is this special being who gave this very special teaching on the perfection of wisdom at this particular time to this particular congregation, which is said to be a perfect congregation, at a perfect place, isn't it? And at least, and this is the idea that you should, that should come to mind, isn't it, when you know, when you recite this first, no, this prologue. Yeah. So I think mainly, you know, this, at this time, you know, bring to mind Buddha and generate devotion. Yeah. Then next, I mean, you're gonna have Shariputra, you know, starting to, you know, going to ask, you know, his questions, yeah, to Avalokiteshvara. Yeah. So at the, also at the time, the Bodhisattva Master, the Avalokiteshvara, looked upon the very practice of the profound perfection of wisdom and beheld those five aggregates also as empty of inherent nature. Yeah. Then through the power of Buddha, Venerable Shariputra said this to Bodhisattva Master Dao Avalokiteshvara, and he starts in questions, and then, how should any son of the niche train, which is who to train in the activity to perform perfection or wisdom? Yeah. So at this point in time, it's not so much, you know, just focusing on Shariputra, oh, the, you know, you have this guy, you know, asking the question. I mean, that's not so much the point. I mean, the thing here is, you know, I mean, you can imagine that, you know, you are the one asking the question, but I mean, rather you should also think about, you should also, you know, think about, you know, the question, isn't it? I mean, you, because we also, we ourselves, we have to wonder, yeah, how on earth, you know, is this perfection of wisdom supposed to be practiced, isn't it? Right, at least we should have some doubts, qualms, queries, similar, you know. Yeah.
So here you can be Shariputra. Huh? Not Shariputra, maybe another putra. Right? So what do they say? Kochiwa tandogana, that soso is jikchiwa samu koreshi. Tomani tunzi kareina se shita koda. Tindeshita, loyula chatapche. What did they make of
that? So when we recite this, you know, we should attempt to bring to our minds, you know, the meaning of emptiness, yeah. So before Shariputra asked his question, Avalokiteshvara, like the Buddha, was in meditative repose. He was focusing, he was also reflecting on the perfection of wisdom, isn't it? So that was the condition. That was one of the was a condition for then Shariputra to ask his question. Yeah. Then the answer from Avalokiteshvara. Yeah. Okay, then Avalokiteshvara replies, yeah. He said that, and the Bodhisattva, Mahasattva, Aya Avalokiteshvara said this to the Venerable Sharavatiputra. So I better pronounce the whole thing, because some people notice that over the many years, I always skip the Vatiputra. Shariputra, any son of the lineage or daughter of the lineage who wishes to practice the activity to perform perfection of wisdom should look upon it like this, correctly and repeatedly beholding those five aggregates also as empty or inherent existence or nature. So one should correctly and repeatedly behold. Behold is not to hold your hands, you know what I mean? I mean literally in Tibetan it's tao, it means to view, to see. Of course not with your eyes, to view basically those five aggregates also as empty inherently nature. He says, hold those five aggregates, and the five aggregates is qualified by also. So what this means is, not only is the I that is imputed independence on the basis of designation, the aggregates, empty of existing inherently, the aggregates themselves also are empty of existing inherently. Okay. Well, having said that, what does it mean when we say the I is empty of existing inherently? What does it mean when we say that the aggregates are existing in, empty of existing inherently? Oh, this is, then we have to bring this, question this, yeah? And reflect on this, and you know? Yeah. R is empty, aggregates are empty. What? Empty of what? Empty of inherent existence. What does it mean? So currently, repeatedly beholding those five aggregates also is empty of inherent nature, or empty of inherent existence is the brief explanation, isn't it? So then the next couple of paragraphs is an expanded explanation, yeah, isn't it? So we start with form is empty, emptiness is form, emptiness is not other than form, form is also not other than emptiness. In the same way, feeling, discrimination, composition, factors, and consciousness are empty. In the commentary, this is said to be, you know, the training of the perfection of wisdom in the paths of accumulation and preparation, isn't it? Well, it says, yeah, it starts with the form aggregate. So form is empty, emptiness is form. But it would be easier if we use I, the person, I, self, as the subject. So rather than starting with form, we could reflect on I is empty, emptiness is I is not other than, emptiness is not other than I is also not other than emptiness, yeah. So, you know, reflecting on the four character or the four features on the basis of I, then, so this is said to be easier than if we were to start with phenomena other than I. After you have done that, then perhaps you could move on to the aggregates. And of course, with the aggregates, you start with the aggregate of form. Then you again, you know, form is empty, emptiness is form, and so forth. And after you're finished, then with form, then you could move on to the next aggregate. You know. So that's why it says, in the same way, feeling. So you reflect on feeling. Then you then discrimination, then compositional factors, and then consciousness. So we start with the self, the person, I. I is empty. Emptiness is I, isn't it? Yeah. So you know, we bring to mind, we recollect, you know, our past experiences of the sense of I that we have, you know. You know, we could, let's say, bring to mind, you know, the experience that we had, you know, of the sense of I when we were feeling very depressed, very down, feeling very useless, hopeless, you know. That's where, you know, we feel that the I is like, you know, so low, isn't it, right? This sense of I is in the field. But there are also times whereby, you know, we feel that this I is so huge and, you know, so elevated, in a sense, you know, especially during the times when there's manifest pride, isn't it? The sense of I is, you know, so overwhelming, yeah? So, you know, so bring to recollect that experience of that those sense of I, you know, and then, you know, analyze the I that we grasp at during those times, you know, and then using the I, then reflect on how, oh, that one, that I is empty, and how emptiness is I. So if we can do this meditation, it helps, you know, to pacify the very disturbed mind. Very disturbed mind.
What does it mean? That time, that Jesus is doing that. My rising is tomba, Sudhana. My said, that she won it, Matuashi, that she tomba, Sudh, that she won it to your manners. That she won it, Zawan, to be much your manners, sister. Till that quacha, that so did it, that she won it, Zawan, and my sister.
So at the point when, you know, it says I is empty, what we have to reflect or realize is that the sense of I, you know, that we have recollected, you know, the those very strong sense of I, you know, whether it's low, high, you know, what we have to understand at the end of the day is how this I, which we grasp at, does not exist from the side of the body and mind. There's nothing in the body and mind or in the collection of the body and the mind that where you can point to such an I. So the I does not exist from the side of the aggregates. You know, how does, you know, how do we think of ourselves, you know, when we have this sense of I, person, you know? How does it appear? It obviously appears, isn't it? Yeah, there's an appearance of ourselves to us, right? And we believe that it exists in a certain way, right? So how it appears, you know, for all of us is that the I appears to exist from the side of the body and mind, which in simple English means the I appears to be the body and mind from the side, from the body and mind. The I is somewhere there. It's inside, outside, or somewhere, basically, you know. Not only is there such an appearance, yeah. We basically believe that this is how the I exists. We ascend completely to the appearance, and we grasp, and we apprehend the I to be like that. It's true. It's somewhere inside. It's there, from the side of the body and mind. So, but what we have to understand and realize for ourselves is that the I does not exist from the side of the aggregates. The I does not exist on the aggregates,
yeah.
We can understand, we can come to understand how the eye, there's no eye on the aggregates, there's no eye from the side of the aggregates. We can come to understand this by depending on analogies. Yeah. And different analogies. Do you remember the analogy of mistaking a coil of rope, seeing a coil of rope as a snake? So there's an appearance of snake on the coil of rope. There's an appearance of a snake, you know, from the coil on, from the side of the coil of rope, isn't it? Right, under certain weather conditions. Yeah. But the reality is that when you look for the snake, that's how it appears, isn't it? But when you look for the snake on the coil of rope, you will not be able to find snake on the rope. You will not be able to find snake amongst the parts that make up the rope, the different parts of the rope. You will not be able to find a snake. The individual parts are not the rope. The collection or together, the whole coil of rope is not the snake. It's not the snake, right? So, exactly in the same way, the eye cannot be found on the aggregates. The eye cannot be found amongst the aggregates. The eye does not exist from the side of the aggregates.
Yeah.
So this is an example, analogy, to help us understand that the I does not exist from the side of the aggregates, which is the basis of the explanation, right? So, you know, when we are trying to discover how the eye does not exist inherently. That's the point, right? So, you know, whether we say I exist inherently, I exist from his own side, that's the point, yeah? So, we are trying to understand and see for ourselves how there is no I existing from the side of the aggregates, although there is such an appearance and belief, but the reality is there is no I from the side of the aggregates. That's what we're trying to find out, yeah? So using the analogy, you know, is one way to help us understand that, right? Another way is to, you know, understand in how things that are dependently arisen based on causes and conditions, things that are dependently arisen based on causes and conditions, they themselves do not, anything that is produced from causes and conditions, they themselves are dependent and not independent, isn't it? Not inherent, isn't it? Right. So the Buddha said this in the sutras. Nagarjuna said this. Therefore, they say those. Therefore, you know, you have such statements like those that are produced from causes and conditions are not produced. So what it means is those that are produced from causes and conditions are not inherently produced. That's the point. Yeah. Right. So on the path of preparation, the meditation on emptiness or the realization of emptiness on the path of preparation is not a direct realization, in that the mind realizing emptiness does not see emptiness directly. Rather, it still gets at emptiness, it realizes emptiness, but it does so through an intervening image. True, technically called a meaning generality. I mean, you could say mental image, but mental image doesn't convey. Yeah, it's simple, but doesn't convey. It's into a meaning generality of emptiness. Yeah. So it is only on the path of seeing that the individual can see. Realize emptiness directly without any intervening meaning generality. Yeah. So, on the path of the training of the perfection of wisdom on the path of seeing is indicated by the next paragraph. Yeah. Shariputra likewise of phenomena emptiness without characteristic unproduced and sees sameness not without stain, not division and not fulfilled. So it talks about, you know, the eight characteristics, yeah. The eight features. Yeah. Kiju. So it says all phenomena are emptiness. So this is talking about the nature or the entity of all phenomena. Yeah. The ultimate nature of all phenomena is emptiness. Yes. But on top of the nature of all phenomena being empty of inherent existence, the causes of phenomena, the causes themselves do not exist inherently. And the effects that are produced by the causes, the effects are produced, but they are not inherently produced. There's no inherent production. Okay? There's no, basically, so in short, not only are phenomena, not only are the ultimate nature of phenomena emptiness, but the causes and effects themselves do not exist inherently also. So here, you know, this talking about, you know, the thinking of the emptiness of inherent existence, you know, thinking about the inherent existence of the emptiness of inherently existing entities, causes and results. Next, Shariputra, therefore, in emptiness, there is no form, no feeling, no discrimination, no compositional factors, no consciousness. This indicates the emptiness, indicates that the five aggregates are, indicates the emptiness of the inherently existent five aggregates, yeah. So the five aggregates basically do not exist inherently, so showing their emptiness. Then there's no ear, no ear, no eye. Yeah, no eye. No eye, no ear, no what, no nose, no tongue, no body, no mind. No visual form, no sound, no odor, no taste, no object of touch, and no phenomenon. This is showing the emptiness of the 12 sources.
Yeah.
There is no eye element and so on up to including no mind element and no mental consciousness. This is showing the emptiness of the 18 constituents or 18 elements. Yeah. So what is manifestly shown are the six objects and the six, not six objects, the six sense powers and the six consciousnesses. But what is implied in meaning, the six objects are also implied in meaning. So all together, they form the 18 constituents. Yeah. There is no ignorance, no extinction, ignorance, and so on, including no aging and death, and no extinction of aging and death. This is showing the emptiness of the 12 links of interdependent, or the 12 links of dependent origination in its forward, in the forward process, in the reverse process, and also, you know, in terms of also talking about the emptiness of the 12 links, and in terms of the, from the perspective of the class of the thoroughly afflicted phenomena, and from the perspective of the class of the thoroughly purified and namjong, Similarly, there's no suffering, origination, cessation, and path. So this indicates the emptiness of the Four Noble Truths. There's no exalted wisdom. This indicates the emptiness of the wisdom, directly perceiving emptiness itself. Or even that wisdom is empty of existing inherently. And there's no attainment. So the attainments themselves do not exist inherently. And there's also no non-attainment. The attainments that will, the attainments that is to be achieved, yeah, the attainments that are to be achieved, they are also empty of existing. They are also empty of inherent existence.
Yeah.
So this whole paragraph here is talking about the training of the perfection of wisdom on the path of meditation, right? So, you know, here, you know, there's this quite a long list of phenomena, yeah? And basically stating that these, all these phenomena, basically the 12 sources or the, and further expanded, the 18 constituents are empty of existing inherently, yeah? So this is showing that, yeah? But it also, what it's trying to tell us is that none of these phenomena exist in the perspective of a superior meditative equipoise or directly perceiving emptiness. In the face of that wisdom, literally in the face of the wisdom or in the perspective of the wisdom, only emptiness appears. Or only emptiness exists, and nothing else. So there is no dualistic appearance. It is said that there is no dualistic appearance in the perspective of the superior meditative poison on emptiness, and there is no dualistic appearances. All dualistic appearances have subsided. So the next paragraph shows, you know, how one achieves enlightenment by training in the perfection of wisdom on the paths of accumulation, preparation, seeing, meditation, and by depending on the training of perfection and wisdom on those paths, then one achieves enlightenment. This is how one has to achieve enlightenment, and this is how the Buddhas of the past have achieved enlightenment. So that's the next paragraph. Shariputra, therefore, because there's no attainment, Buddhisattvas rely on the only perfection of wisdom, the mind without oscillation, without fear, having completely passed beyond error, the reason, and point, and nirvana, or the Buddhas and beyond, and three times also manifested completely awakened to answer possible perfect, complete enlightenment in reliance on the perfection of wisdom. The next paragraph is expressing the greatness of the perfection of wisdom. And in this case, the perfection of wisdom here is the path of perfection of wisdom, isn't it? Yeah, the mind, the wisdom realizing emptiness, yeah. And so it says, therefore, the mantra of the perfection of wisdom. So the mantra of definitive meaning, the actual real mantra, is this wisdom, you know, realizing emptiness, yeah. Right? The mantra of definitive meaning, yeah. And if you remember, you know, mantra is made of two syllables, man and tra, isn't it? What it means is protecting the mind, mind protection, protecting the mind from fears, from suffering. Yeah? And what is it that protects? It is the wisdom perceiving emptiness, realizing emptiness that protects. Yeah? So, yeah, so it expresses the next paragraph basically expresses the greatness of the perfection of wisdom. And therefore, the mantra of the perfection of wisdom, the mantra of great knowledge, answer, mantra equal to unequal to mantra, that really specifies all suffering, should be known as truth, since it's not false.
Oh,
So this basically talking about the features and how special and how great the wisdom perceiving emptiness or the wisdom of perfection of wisdom is, yeah. Right. Then next, there's a declaration of the mantra, which is brief or condensed presentation of the five paths. Remember the last lesson? Yeah. So the mantra of perfection of wisdom is the Katharita, Katigati Bhattakiripara, Sangari Bodhisoha. Then Shariputra, the Bodhisattva Mahasatoshi, trained in the power of perfection of wisdom like that. That is kind of like a summary and again emphasizing, you know, basically emphasizing in brief, you know, that this is how one must train in the perfection of wisdom, yeah. Right? Okay, then the Bhagavan rose on the concentration and commanded the Bodhisattva Mahasattva Avalokiteshvara saying, well, it was his under the lineage. It's like that. It's like that one is one should practice perfect perfection of wisdom just as you indicated, even the Tathagatas rejoice. Then next you have the conclusion and celebration, you know, rejoicing. Yeah. The Bhagavan having thus spoken the Venerable Sharavati Putra, the Bodhisattva Mahasattva Avalokiteshvara, those surrounding the entirety along the globe, all humans of Zura, together with all joy and happy praise that spoken by the Buddha. Bhagavan. So if we do manage to, you know, gain some insight, small insight, you know, some understanding of the emptiness of inherent existence, and this is a cause for us to rejoice, isn't it? Yeah. For learning about the ultimate nature of reality, emptiness, you know, it's kind of like similar to, the benefits kind of like similar to, you know, learning, you know, all the other, the teachings or scriptures of the Buddha, yeah.
Chilab Joya, what did they get? Chabachimucha, the inside. Chilo Jusa, Shido, Rana Yu.
So just as the Buddha commanded, commanded who? No, I'm so confused. Yeah, anyway, the Buddha basically woke up and they said, oh, well done, you know. So likewise, you know, if we manage to get, you know, some just understanding, you know, some understanding of ultimate nature of reality, you know, then this will really become, you know, it's really a cause for the Buddhas really to feel, to rejoice, you know. And this is what really pleases the Buddhas, yeah. And this is the supreme, the best offering, the prayer, yeah. Supreme offering to the Buddhas, yeah. Then, of course, and then the Buddhas rejoice. Then, likewise, you know, we have the gods and the asuras and so forth. They will likewise feel happy and will also assist us and not kacau us. Although the Buddhas are powerful, but in order for us to be zapped by them, you know, to receive, you know, the inspiration and their blessings, we say blessings, or you know, whatever blessing is, I don't know, you know, to feel, you know, to receive, you know, blessing from Buddha, although they have all the power and ability, but you know, we first must be a receptacle. Eh? We must be a suitable basis for the blessings, for to receive the blessings. Yeah, right. So if we engage in the threefold activity of hearing, reflection, and meditation on emptiness, on the perfection of wisdom, this definitely will make us a basis. Yeah, to receive the blessings. So this kind of concludes our, you know, looking at the Heart of the Perfection of Wisdom Sutra, yeah? So, you know, based on the benefits, you know, that were taught by Buddha, you know, yeah, the benefits that, you know, one can gain from, you know, learning, reflecting, you know, and thinking, meditating on it, you know. So from that we can kind of infer or, you know, understand that, well, we all have accumulated a vast store of merit, yeah. We could rejoice, we could really rejoice in that, yeah. Okay, so I was asked, you know, about the Bodhisattva, Mahasattva. Similar.
Yes, sir. Changchup samba samba sena ta tundu nyawa dosi ta changchup de tundu nyawa sa ta
So you have Bodhisattva. Bodhi refers to enlightenment and the great enlightenment. So Bodhisattva is an aspirant to enlightenment. Aspirant, not aspirin. Someone who is aspiring. Someone who aspires is an aspirant. Yeah. So an aspirant to enlightenment. So what this person is aspiring to is the Dhammakaya. Which is what he sees as something that needs to be obtained. The object that needs to be achieved, obtained, is the truth body, the Dhammakaya. So from that perspective, he's a Bodhisattva because he aspires to that. Yeah. So you're trying, and it's kind of like explaining, you know, not the definition yet, but it's just like the word, the play of the word, you know, Bodhisattva. Then we have Mahasattva. Because he aspires to full enlightenment for the welfare, the benefit of all other sentient beings. Therefore, he is a Mahasattva. Sattva, loosely translated as being, So he's a great being, a great Mahasattva. So he is a Mahasattva because he aspires to that enlightenment for others, So it's kind of like the looking at the etymology of the word Bodhisattva and Mahasattva. Because he aspires to the Dhammakaya in order to accomplish his own purpose, he's a Bodhisattva. But because he aspires to this enlightenment also to accomplish the welfare of others, he's called a Mahasattva.
Okay, that's all. So, maybe small announcement. So next Tuesday, so I thought maybe Gishi Sherab, he's from one of the Kapan Gishis, who is ex-principal of Kapan Monastery, so he's here. So next Tuesday, I think he'll give some talk and my training in ABC in 7:30 Tuesday night. So I'll take a break that night. So maybe you have some new flavor there, okay? Need something new one in the chair, in the throat, maybe just help you. Yeah, so I think the topic will be mind training. So please come and listen. I think you'll talk directly in English, okay?
Potential,
so teach directly in English.
Yeah.
So.
Potential future.
So you teach in America for 3-4 years. So you teach in KL. Penang before. So I asked him to give some talk. I said, take a holiday that night, he said. So he accepted. So please welcome. So you can ask, there's question answer, then you can ask him also. All right. We start the Thursday, we start the class, the sixth perfection. Yeah.
I have a small announcement to make. We have been studying the perfection of Heart Sutra teachings. We had the perfect place, perfect timing, perfect teacher. So now is also the perfect time to enjoy and celebrate the birthday of Khyamrin Boshe, which is actually happens tomorrow. So Khyamrin Boshe, we are deeply, deeply, deeply grateful for receiving this precious teachings of the Heart Sutra. And on this rare occasion, which is so fortunate to have your birthday as well, and today is the recap synopsis of the Heart Sutra. So rejoice in your good fortune and good merits and our good karma to benefit from your teachings. And we celebrate your birthday. Yeah. So without much ado, can we just celebrate your birthday with a happy birthday song? Thank you. So, 1, 2, 3. Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday to Khyamrin Rinpoche. Happy birthday to you. Lord, we wish you all the very best of health and the very best of long, 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 long life. That you may always stay and teach us as long as samsara remains.
No camera.
Also, just to remind you, this Sunday we celebrate the long life puja of Khyamrin Boshe at 10 o'clock in the morning.
Nine a.m.
Lose 1 hour sleep. Sorry, so 9 a.m. Sunday.
Make sure you come on time.
Thank you very much. That was very good.
You want to cut?